Welcome back, everybody. This is the Life Enthusiast Co-op Online Radio Network, restoring vitality to you and to the planet. I'm your host, Scott Patton, and joining us, as usual, is the founder of the Life Enthusiast Co-op, Martin Patella. Hey, Martin, how you doing?
I'm doing good. I want to mark this call as first in 2012, and I think it's significant, and I think I would like to go into kind of a recap as to what happened in the first while of 2012.
Sure. Like New Year's is 2 months away, and so 60 days have gone by, and I guess the question is, have you kept your New Year's resolution, or are you one of the 90-odd percent that breaks it after about 3 days?
Is that all we get?
No, I don't know what it is, but they keep doing studies, and whatever your New Year's resolution is, by partway through the next year, it doesn't exist anymore. So,
one thing I remember reading is that if you write it down as a statement and as a commitment, you have a much greater chance of delivering on it.
So. Yeah, as opposed to just saying it, absolutely. And if you post it on the mirror of your bathroom, you're either going to guilt yourself into doing it or you're going to take the note down real quick.
Right.
So what's been happening in the last 60 days, Martin?
Well, I guess the biggest change here is that I have completed the course as metabolic typing advisor. So I'm now certified with the William Wolcott's metabolic typing.
Wonderful.
That's actually, in my life, a big deal, because I have previously insisted that I'm not going to sign up for anything, or I'm not going to belong to any party, and I'm not going to let any medical organization or any licensing body dictate what I can or cannot do. But I decided that Bill Wolcott and his people are actually very benevolent, good folks that have actually found the answer to how human physiology really works.
Oh, cool.
So this is the culmination of my 30 years of searching for an answer and actually finding it. I'm totally impressed with them, and I'm thoroughly impressed with myself because I passed the exam. How's that?
Congratulations. Woo! That's wonderful. So for those of us that maybe haven't tuned into some previous episodes, because I know we have talked in the past about metabolic typing, just quickly, what is metabolic typing?
Essentially, the discovery is that biological individuality dictates how people process inputs, as in food, and convert them into energy. And depending on which metabolic type you are, you will either need to have more of the fats and proteins in your diet or more of the carbohydrates in your diet. And if you were to sort of paint it like a rainbow, where you, on the red end, you would be like an Eskimo eating mainly meat and fat diet, or a hunter-gatherer the Stone Age diet.
Right.
And on the other side, maybe I'll just cut the rainbow short and call it green. I will have the essentially the vegetarian, somebody like a desert oasis dweller who's going to live on dates, figs, pomegranates, and other fruits. So if you fed mainly carby foods to the person that needs to be rich in fats and proteins, he's going to suffer. He's going to get ill, and vice versa. So if you send an Eskimo to Florida and put him on a diet of grapefruits and I don't know what else, something else that grows there, he will suffer. And if you take a somebody from New York and send them up to the far north and try to feed them on that meat and whale blubber.
Whale blubber is what, yeah, I was going to say that.
Yeah, right. They'll suffer terribly too. So, genetic predisposition. We have all been selectively bred for tens of thousands of years to be adapted to the environment from which we came.
Mm-hmm.
That actually reminds me. I just got a call. Thanks for all the wonderful feedback we're getting from people that are listening to the podcast. This call came over all the way from the Caribbean, one of the islands. I think it was the Grenadines. And the lady calls me and says, you know, I've been listening to your podcast and I need some advice. And I'm thinking, well, this is encouraging.
Yeah, that's great.
Keep it coming. Anyway, so this lady tells me, you know, I'm 5'2", 240 pounds. And I'm trying to visualize that. And I'm saying, so you're about twice the weight you should be, right? And she says, about. And then she says, yeah, I'm 35. My youngest child is about 5 years old. And ever since that, I've been just putting on weight. Mm-hmm. And they took away my gallbladder that blew up. So they told me to be on a low-fat diet. And I'm saying, okay, lady, understand that your genetics. Tell me about that. And she says, well, my grandfather's Scottish, and my other parentage and everything else is African. So I said, okay, well, think this through. The Scots people, they live in the far north. They were fishermen. The only food that they ate was what they could haul out of the sea. There's hardly anything growing on the rocky grounds among the heather fields or whatever the heck they get up there. Mm-hmm. And your African people, well, they were snatched from the coast. They were fishermen. They lived under coconut trees or coconut palms, and they ate tropical fruits, and they ate fish and seaweed. What are you eating? She says, well, I've been told to eat the low-fat diet, so I've had oatmeal for breakfast, and I'm having toast and something for lunch, and, you know, low-fat, carbohydrates. And I'm saying, these people are killing you.
Yeah, she's totally eating the wrong thing for her body.
Right. I mean, if you think about it, right? The African fishermen, they went out into the ocean and caught fish and ate that every day, and they ate fat oil and the meats from the coconuts. And anyway, so I asked her, so do you have an avocado tree in your garden? She says, oh yeah, there are avocados, guavas, and papayas growing in my garden.
Wow. And she's not eating any of them.
No. She's eating some Italian farmer diet. And I'm saying, the people who wrote this diet for you never had you in their mind. They were writing it for an Italian farmer, not for you.
And everybody buys into it, and then we have catastrophe.
Right, so that's the position from the statistics-based medical approach. You know, they pretend that everybody is a white European from Central Europe, because that's who they have in their studies.
Right, right.
Sorry.
So it's kind of like doing a study on dogs and using that information to come up with food for a cat.
Pretty much. You know, if I were the statistically average person, I would have one testicle, one female-style breast. I would be black on half of my body, or maybe a quarter. One of my eyes would be slanted. And a total impossibility, right?
Yeah. Cannot,
I need to respect my biological individuality. So anyway, you ask, what's this metabolic typing all about? We are able to discover which system is dominant in your creation of energy and how you need to feed it so that you're balanced. Because half the population is already too acidic, the other half's too alkaline.
Hmm.
One half is alkalized by fats and proteins. The other half is alkalized by high carbs. Low fats and proteins.
And we talk about that because the majority of the population is acidic based on the types of foods that we get in an average North American European diet.
Well, yes. If you are body type that's acidified by high protein, then yeah, you'll be acidic.
Well, and regardless of it, you're gonna, if you have a glass of pop, you're acidic, right?
Yes.
You know, I mean, most of us have, and we think, oh, Coke Zero or Pepsi Max is fine because there's no sugar in it or something. But I mean, when you look at the, I mean, unless you're kind of the in the whole V, maybe we're talking to the choir here, preaching to the choir, I don't know, but you know, when I just look at it at the grocery store and how many displays they have of Coke, you know, colas and pops and soft drinks and all that stuff, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that the majority of the population is incredibly acidic simply because of that one item that they're drinking as if it's water.
Right, yes. That's what needs to be said. There are several foods that are on the no-no list for everybody.
The no-no list. It reminds me, didn't Ringo Starr have a song, and no-no, you can't do that anymore? We should play that. I guess we could play it if it wasn't that it's copywritten and we get the music industry down our necks. But
maybe we can put a 7-second segment. But the point is that refined sugar, refined salt, refined plant oils,
refined flour.
Refined flour. That pretty much covers it. Of course, alcohol. And all the nerve stimulants that would include MSG and
so you mentioned alcohol. What, like, we hear all these good things about red wine and the people of, and I guess this is a great example of what you're actually saying, right? Because I was going to say, and the people of southern France who drink it and it's very good for them. So we should all have a glass of red wine. Just because it's really good for a Frenchman in the Mediterranean doesn't mean it's really good for someone in Southeast Asia.
Right, here goes. Okay, so in France, they eat a diet that's very high in purin. Purin is the element that is in either red meat or in duck, geese, and other birds like that. So Frenchmen eat foie gras, which is the...
Oh, yeah, of course you do.
...liver, and they eat steak, and they drink red wine and all of that. That's all that high purin stuff. And again, about a third of the population of this planet is well needing that kind of food, that kind of intake. And so they're watching the study and they're saying, how is it possible that in France the heart disease is what it should be because they eat so badly? Well, they don't eat badly. They eat exactly what a Frenchman should eat. Duh. But if you did that to somebody else, like a Chinese person, they'd suffer.
Yeah.
So that's why we need to actually get down to the metabolic type. But because of all this genetic mixing that we're experiencing on the planet, you can no longer just base it on where you're from. You actually need to do the metabolic typing test, get the answers, get it all processed through the computer algorithm, and it'll spill back at you your dominance. And either you're dominant in the oxidative system, you know, the Krebs cycle, the citric acid cycle, or you're dominant in the controlling system, which is the iodine-based endocrine system. And depending on which of these two you are, again, you would be either a fast oxidizer or a slow oxidizer. A fast oxidizer burns sugar just like putting newspaper into a fireplace. You have a big amount of fire for 5 minutes, and then it's over. Then it's a crash. Well, slow oxidizer, that's the opposite. You have to feed him the newspaper, like, well, that's a metaphor. You need to feed him a high-carb diet, because if you try to feed him the slow-burning, high-purine fats and proteins, then it's great to go against his body type. So once you understand who you are, the world is easy. All of a sudden, we are back to this lady in the Caribbean who I'm telling, well, please eat eggs for breakfast, not your oatmeal. Oh, and eat your What is it called again?
Guava and papayas and mangoes and avocados.
Because she says they're telling me not to eat them. I'm saying, look at yourself. You're 240 pounds. You've been doing this for 5 years. Isn't this long enough to admit that whatever they've been telling you is wrong?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, isn't that an interesting, that's a really interesting point, right? It's kind of like we abdicate responsibility. We ask people, okay, what should I do? And then we follow it blindly, regardless of the result.
Yes.
Instead of saying, you know what, I've, because I was just thinking about what you were talking about, the foie de gras and all the French food and everything else. And I love croissants. And I know one thing about croissants, and that is if I eat them, they show up on my belly in 10 minutes, right?
Yes.
And all that, but all the other things when I was thinking of the French diet actually turns me off. Like I just like, oh, the whole, eating geese, like duck, I have. No, thank you, right? And particularly as a staple type of diet.
Yeah.
And so we've been trained not to listen to our body, not to listen to our intuition, not to listen to how we really actually feel about it, and say, no, you know, you need to have red. I don't like red wine. I'll have a glass every once in a while, and I'll enjoy that one glass, but it's like once every 4 to 6 months, as opposed to two glasses every day. And I think it would be really bad for me to have that. I feel like that, right? It just, but I don't know. I mean, and I'm not about to try it and find out. But it just seems to me that we, you know, if you try a diet and after a week you're lethargic and you put on 2 pounds or 5 pounds and you can't sleep at night and blah 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 blah, then like change the diet.
That's correct. It's but here goes. Everybody's trying every possible diet, but even the diets don't make any sense.
Yeah.
You know, like. They have a grapefruit diet. Well, okay. So if you eat grapefruit and nothing else for 3 weeks, if you are the high carb type, then you're going to do fine. If you are the low carb, high fat type, first you're going to starve like crazy. So you're going to lose a pile of weight and then you're going to crash. You're going to actually get sick. Anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we're definitely going to be talking about this more and more as we move forward through this year and the following years, and I really want to suggest that if you find what we've been talking about in terms of metabolic type interesting, is scroll back through the list of podcasts either at iTunes or at www.lifeenthusiastcoop. Just up at the top, we've got a link there for podcasts, and see some of the other information that we've put together on metabolic typing. And because you are now an official metabolic typer, Martin, I'm sure that we're going to get into it even in more depth in the coming months and years.
Thanks as much. We are offering the service now. Of course, it's not free, but it's well worth the money.
Cool. And one of the other things that we're going to be doing moving through this year is we're going to be bringing on more of the manufacturers that make the products that you can find at Life Enthusiast Co-op. And we have done that in the past quite a bit, but we're going to continue to do that probably even a little bit more, because one of the things that just amazes me about the Life Enthusiast Co-op is the stories behind the people that create the products that you're able to get there. And we're not looking, you know, all of these, they have some similar types of stories in that they have small, you know, manufacturing facilities, and they're just absolutely passionate and love what it is that they're doing and the results that people that are using their products are getting. And it's not, you know, all the stuff that comes out of these massive, impersonal plants and factories. They're really all created with love, and I just think it really shows in the potency of the products and the success stories people have when they use them.
Yep, good point. I find that as soon as the company reaches a certain size, the guys with spreadsheets arrive and they start tweaking the profitability, and especially when a company goes public as opposed to private, instead of the stock being held by or the controlling interest being held by the founder or founders, you now have shareholders, and you're no longer accountable to yourself. You're now accountable to this crowd called the shareholders, and they simply demand that you produce profits, and profit is produced by essentially squeezing the quality out of the product to the cutting edge minimum so that it still sells but costs the least possible. And the kind of products that we sell have been made by people who don't care about that. They care about the efficiency and effectiveness and the benefits. And why? Because many of these people have had a story somewhat similar to mine where they've had a massive health problem, often created by the medical system itself, that they had to overcome. Some of these problems are also created by our lifestyles, second and third and fourth generation since the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. The problems are compounding. The level of chronic and inflammatory and degenerative disease is rising. Scott, have you ever read the Francis Pottinger's study about cats?
No. I haven't even ever heard of any of those words, except I think I know what a cat is.
Okay. Well, this is good because this is worth mentioning. In 1946, Francis Pottinger decided to study the effect of cooked food on something. He picked cats. And so he created two pens, equal size, outdoor, large pens, where he kept a large number of cats. And he fed both of them identical food, except in one it was raw and in the other one it was cooked, 100% cooked. So if in one the milk fed to them would be raw, in the other one it would be pasteurized. In one the mouse or whatever he'd feed them for meat would be raw, in the other one it was cooked. The interesting part was this. The cooked food cats were experiencing increasing amount of genetic trouble. The subsequent generations were weaker, deformed, tooth problems, hip problems, fur problems, all kinds of degeneration. In fact, it got so bad that by the seventh generation, they were so disabled that they were no longer even reproducing. They were sterile after seven generations. So it's somewhat indicative that the in vitro fertilization for humans is on the rise because people are no longer conceiving in a normal way. It's now evident that our teeth are growing less healthy. We're now having to do orthodontics to restore the natural arch of the teeth. Teeth are getting weaker and whatnot. And the rising levels of autism, and ADD, and fibromyalgia, and I don't know, you just name all of those different diabetes and obesity. All of those are inflammatory degenerative diseases that are on the rise. And if we take the conclusions from Pottinger's study, it's right staring us in the face.
Yeah.
Here's an interesting bit.
That's scary news, actually, when you think about it.
Totally. Interesting bit I wanted to mention is that in the pen where the cats ate the regular raw food, there was grass growing on the ground. In the other pen, it was all killed and dead. The feces of the fat cats that were eating cooked food was devoid of enzymes in such way that it was not able to fertilize the soil. In fact, it was toxic to the soil, so that grass would grow there. Food for thought.
Yeah. And it's going to take a while to reverse that whole thing if we, because you think about how many generations back we've been eating cooked foods.
Well, cooked is, tastes better. You know, it enhances the stuff. When you caramelize the surface of a steak or a chicken breast, it just enhances the flavors. However, if you do eat steak, you should eat it undercooked. you should eat it medium rare or rare. You should eat sushi. Of course, you need to make sure that it was frozen so that the parasites in it don't overwhelm you. It's complicated.
Well, and if you do eat cooked foods, if you eat a lot of raw foods, then that'll, I mean, that would help, right?
Absolutely.
So, you know, have your salad with your food.
Yeah, that's why people who commit to eating raw food are so much healthier than people who are not. But even the raw foodists can get it all wrong if they are not following their metabolic type. I've been counseling this lady. She's a raw foodist, but she's eating not enough protein, and she's sick as can be.
Mm.
And I'm telling her, you need to increase protein intake. Get our hemp protein and chlorella spirulina and other sprouted protein mixes. And you need to get olive oil and coconut oil and perhaps butter if you're willing. And start eating more of that. Otherwise, you will never get right. Now, that's specific to this one person who needs to have high protein intake. It's not everybody.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, that's what I've learned. That's what I've been practicing. That's what I'm absolutely certain will make the dramatic difference in people's lives. I finally understand that as soon as we sort people by their biological individuality, we're able to counsel them correctly. And as long as we try to pretend that everybody needs to eat the same thing, we're going to be failing in about half the cases. It's going to be a crapshoot unless we ask the fundamental question. What's your biological individuality? What's your metabolic type?
Cool.
Huh. So what's yours, Scott? Are you going to go through the metabolic typing process?
I think I'm going to have to.
Yes. I think you're going to have to. Well, so it is. My New Year's commitment was to change everything that I do about the Life Enthusiast business. Fix ourselves upon the delivery of customized content. So with that in mind, I would like to deliver more of the live interactive to people, because it's necessary to speak to people and meet them at their level, rather than just throwing some anonymous information, slapping it on the wall, hoping that some of it will stick. In fact, I think you're going to be able to help me with that, right?
You bet.
So I just got the message that that we're going to do a lot more of the webinar type of presentation. I'm going to try and bet on the fact that more and more people are able to interact with their computer a little stronger and use their internet as an information device. So instead of just letting you read stuff online, we're going to connect with you with seminars and webinars that they will be conducted live for those who would like to have the interactive session. And of course, we'll be recording them and allowing people to at least review the live ones and ask us questions. In fact, this is my request. Do ask questions. Tell us what your worries or concerns are. We'll be very happy to answer them in our future seminars. Anyway, Scott, I certainly hope that you're going to be able to support me with this technology, because I'm mostly all about health. Will you swear on your conscience that you can support us with technology?
I take an oath of allegiance to the Life Enthusiast Co-op, Martin. Okay. I'll be there and make sure it works.
Oh, good. Well, with that, let's just make some promises. We will do this podcast a little less frequently now, but we will be coming up with webinars. So come back to our website at life-enthusiast.com. Expect announcements. We are actually working on a new version of the website, so that's, again, watch for surprises there. and watch on our blog, and we'll keep you informed. And for now, for Scott, this is Martin, life enthusiast restoring vitality to you and to the planet. Thank you very much for listening.